On behalf of the AICPA Information Management and Technology Assurance Division, this is David Wood, here with Audrey Ketcher, Brian Thomas, and Torpy White. Thank you for joining us. We have members of our SOC task force to speak about the update to the SOC 2 guide. So first of all, I just want to remind everyone that a new SOC 2 audit guide came out in 2015, and so there were some changes related to that, and so we're going to talk about those today. So first of all, if we could start with Brian, what were some of the SOC 2 changes that you saw between the 2013 and the 2015 guide?
One of the more significant ones that drew my attention right away was the distinction between user entity responsibilities versus complementary user entity controls. So historically, what we've seen is that service organizations will list a wide variety of responsibilities that are the responsibility of the user of the service and will designate those as complementary user entity controls. However, with the revised guidance, there's really a distinction now between what they're considering to be complementary user entity controls versus user entity responsibilities. And the primary distinction there really is whether or not the controls on the side of the user entity are truly necessary to help fulfill the criteria associated with the principles being reported upon. If they're not truly necessary to fulfill the criteria, then they're really more of a user entity responsibility as opposed to a complementary user entity control. So really more of like a requirement that the service organization is putting on the user entity for best practices, things that should be in place on the user entity side, but are not necessarily required in order for the service organization to fulfill its responsibilities under the criteria.
Great, thank you. Torpy, was there something that caught your eye?
Absolutely. One of the big things that caught my eye was there were more examples of reports and different scenarios that we, as the service owners, may find ourselves facing when we're conducting an SSA 16 or an AT101 engagement. And those examples certainly help when you're having discussions with the service organization about different scenarios that could come up during the course of an engagement and whether those are reportable events or not. So having those additional examples to point to and help guide us has been very instrumental in moving the practices forward.
Audrey, was there something that you found different that you're informing your clients about?
No, nothing in particular. I think Brian highlighted some of the key items. Just reminding everybody to stay in tune with the guide and the changes. And I think we'll be talking about some other changes that have been happening in and around this space beyond just the guide.
And Audrey, why did they go through a SOC 2 change in guide? I think this is just a refresh after 2 years. Why did they go through this process?
Well, I think basically what we're looking at is technology and standards are evolving, and we're looking at ways to make sure things are more streamlined. I think as we talk about some of the changes later with trust principles, that was a perfect example of that. But as the industry and as the guidance leader for this, we're just evolving how we're doing our reporting to be in line with the changes that are happening in technology today.
Great, thank you. I think one of the things that I noticed in the changes were some more clarification on what to do if there was a control within a SOC 2 that just did not operate during the period. So the control was in place, but there was nothing to test. Brian, could you talk to us about how we deal with a situation with that now with the new guidance?
Well, with the control that is in place but was not executed during the period for one reason or the other, the guidance is to go ahead and disclose that there was nothing to test. So it's not that it's necessarily an exception, meaning that the criteria is not fulfilled, but the auditor cannot come to a conclusion that the control is operating effectively if there were no occurrences to test within the period. So a good example of that might actually be, for example, if we talk about a programming change. For some systems, there may not have been significant changes that occurred within the reporting period. If that's the case, then there would be no occurrences of the control activity, such as testing of the change, approval of the change, those types of controls that only execute on the occurrence of the change. So if in the period that activity did not occur, the auditor should disclose that there were no occurrences to test and the reasons therefore, as opposed to just saying no exceptions noted.
Thank you. That's very helpful. As we look at the guide too, I think there's some questions that our clients ask are, what's really the difference between a qualified opinion and an emphasis of a matter paragraph? Audrey, could you help us kind of understand the difference between the two?
So an emphasis of matter paragraph can be considered if we want to draw a user's attention to certain things. So for example, we may want to make sure they're appropriately presenting and disclosing with the description, the assertion, the information section that in our judgment is important to go ahead and show the users. So we would add an emphasis of matter paragraph. Another example is if we're going to try to disclose certain information that wasn't otherwise disclosed in the other areas of the report. So for example, one example that we've outlined in the guide for you is that subsequent to period end, service organization could have had something like a flood in the data center. We would add an emphasis of matter in the report for that. The qualified opinions really go into when the design or operating effectiveness of the controls did not work through the period and then would cause us to want to give a qualification, or it could be a disclaimer, adverse opinion, specifically related to that criteria because of the rate of deviations or the magnitude of such failures with those controls. So the qualified opinions about when there's deficiencies that are going to have us qualify the opinion. And the emphasis of matter is just when we're wanting to explain further information in the opinion that wouldn't otherwise be disclosed that could be important. Does that help, David?
It does. Thank you. One thing I noticed, too, in the guide was a new requirement around just ensuring that you're getting comfort over key reports, that they're complete and accurate, kind of tying it with some of the standards and requirements of PCOBA. With that, sometimes those are not disclosed in SOC 2 reports. So as a potential client that's looking for a firm to get a SOC 2 report from, is there any guidance that you would have to what to look for from a firm when they're looking to get a SOC 2 issued? Torpy, do you have any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Some of the things that you should really start to ask questions around is how experienced is that firm with performing both SOC 2 and SOC 1 reports? And some firms may have a practice that is skewed towards one or the other, but I would ask around how many of they're doing, what kind of experience they have, what kind of size staff does that firm have, or are they using employees or contractors on the work, and what's the review process that firm has in place and quality assurance process to make sure that they're not somebody that's outsourcing a piece of the engagement to another firm that may not have the qualifications to perform that work, because we want the AICPA standards to be adhered to as closely as possible, and you want to work with a firm that understands those standards and is following them to the fullest extent they should be.
Thanks. Is any other recommendations, Brian, that you would see from selecting a firm?
I think I have quite a few, and this is something we could probably go on and on about, but certainly some things that come to mind are, what are the combinations of skill sets that the firm that you're talking with has to bring to bear on this particular subject matter? So SOC 2, while it is definitely an attestation standard and an examination report that will be produced, there are numerous skill sets that are required in order to be able to properly evaluate the criteria associated with the SOC 2, primarily security skills. So the firm that you're dealing with for the SOC 2 should have a good combination of not only audit and attestation background, but also the ability to evaluate security criteria at a very detailed level in order to be able to properly execute the SOC 2 against perhaps subject matter like cloud computing or software as a service type platforms.
Great. Thank you. The SOC 2 has a lot of benefits for organizations. Audrey, can you speak to how a SOC 2 can help audit once and report many?
The beauty of SOC 2, we've really proven this out since it was coming out in around 2010 timeframe. The criteria have been defined at a level that has the flexibility to define specific controls that map to several other standards. We've proven this out over and over, and if you go to the AICPA site, you'll see we've mapped it to NIST, COSO, COBIT, all these different standards. So the criteria, the core of this, that have been publicly vetted are proven the test of time, even mapping to NIST. So the flexibility is there to allow those to be mapped in to the SOC 2 report. And then the SOC 2 report you can use to share with many of your constituents. So again, it's audit once, report many, with the framework that is proven to be mapped to several of the standards as they evolve.
Just to add on to what Audrey's saying, I would just add that this really is, I think, the core strength of what SOC 2 has brought to the market. So in 2011, when this first became available as an option for firms to report against, it really took time to evolve and see where this was going to go. But since that time period, we've seen where the trust principles and criteria map very well to a number of other forms of third-party assurance that are available out there. So whether that be ISO 27001, NIST, as Audrey mentioned, HIPAA is another concern, the HIPAA regulation, Cloud Security Alliance's Cloud Control Matrix maps very well to the trust principles and criteria. So just on and on and on. And I would just echo what Audrey is saying about this. This is, I think, one of the core attributes of what makes SOC 2 very valuable in the marketplace.
Great. Thank you, Brian. Are you seeing with those additional regulations that they're adding that to their opinion and opining on those, or are they more disclosures in the Section 5, the unaudited section of the SOC 2 report?
I've seen more of the latter, so where organizations are taking the criteria and adding a mapping to the other regulations in the unaudited section of the report, or Section 5, as many people refer to it. Although I have seen more conversations around actually modifying the opinions and the criteria that are disclosed within the opinion or the assertion to take into account these other standards and regulations. So the Cloud Control Matrix is one that I'm more familiar with, where firms who play a heavy role in the cloud space are actually now issuing SOC 2 reports that mold in the criteria for the Cloud Control Matrix, and it requires modifications to the assertion in the report as a result of that.
Great.
On the AICPA website, we did post out some FAQs, for example, for how you would do this with HITRUST. So we've given you some FAQs, some example reporting, and the mapping that would be necessary. But there's several options in the reporting that can be addressed, and we're seeing an uptick on that in the market.
Great, thank you. One thing that hasn't been mentioned related to SOC 2 is probably cybersecurity. Can we speak to any future developments related to cyber attestations and the supply chain assurance? I'll ask Torpy.
I think that's coming down the pike. While certainly cybersecurity is the latest and greatest threat perceived in corporate America, it's not new. It's something that I think a lot of experienced SOC auditors have always been considering in the scope of their engagements. It's just now carrying a new name. The supply chain piece, I think, is where we're going to see a lot more traction. And more regulators, no matter what the industry, are starting to look at vendor management programs. And that includes vendors as far down the supply chain as you can get to ensure that data that is being handled, manipulated, looked at, or transmitted through those supply chain vendors is secure in the most advantageous way possible. So we as the AICPA and service owners should expect to see more requests from those supply chain vendors as those regulators really press their commercial entities on their vendor management programs.
Great, thank you. On behalf of the AICPA Information Management and Technology Assurance Division, this has been David Wood with Audrey Ketcher, Brian Thomas, and Torpy White. To access more information resources on information technology, privacy, data analytics, and technology assurance, visit AICPA.org/IMTA/resources. I also highly encourage IMTA section members and CITP credential holders to review your biweekly electronic IMTA news to keep up with the latest news, resources, advocacy, and events. Visit AICPA.org/IMTA/news for the latest edition.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein. and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.